Shalom and welcome to Sem Torah for Parshat Bereishit. In Israel, when so many people take off time from work and school because of Yantif, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, they call this time of year Acharei HaChagim, post-Chagim. You know, you talk to someone in the bank, when is that going to be ready? Acharei HaChagim. You talk to the person doing work on your house, when do you think you'll come back? Acharei HaChagim. It's always after the Chagim, after the Chagim. So here we are after the Chagim, and we ourselves look at a new period, a new era, a new time of year where we have high hopes for new accomplishments, and we have high hopes for changing habits after the long season of Elul, and Rosh Hashanah, and Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and Hoshana Rabbah, and Shmini Atzeret, and Simchat Torah. Here we are, we're ready to put it into action. And we read in this week's Parsha and Parshat Bereishit, a pasuk with a medrash which I think has tremendous import on this attitude and looking forward. The Torah tells us at the very end of the very first perek in all of Tanakh, at the end of Perek Aleph in Sefer Bereishit and Parshat Bereishit, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the end of the sixth day of creation, after He has created literally the entire universe, the next pasuk is Vayechulu HaShamayim VeHaaretz. He's about to create Shabbat. And at that critical juncture, so to speak, in looking backwards on what Hashem accomplished, so to speak, and going forward, the Torah tells us the following, Vayar Elokim et kol asher asa, Hashem, Elokim, saw everything that He did, that He made, that He created, that He accomplished, so to speak, Vihine tov me'od. Everything was very good. Vayera vayivoker yom hashishi, etc. What does it mean, Vihine tov me'od? Says the Medrash in Bereishit Rabbah in chapter Tet, part Tet. Bereishit Rabbah Tet. Vihine tov ze yetzer tov. Vihine tov me'od ze yetzer hara. Again, the Medrash says that when the Torah says Vihine tov, that's the yetzer tov. But v'hine tov me'od ze yetzer hara. And many, many mefarshim, certainly more modern mefarshim, have dealt with this and tried to understand. I don't understand. How could it be that tov is yetzer tov, but tov me'od is the yetzer hara? And again, there's many ways and angles to go by this. I wanted to share an idea of the Dubna Magid, but then take it, I think, in a little bit of a different direction than he took it, with all due respect. The Dubna Magid, who died at the very early 19th century, the Dubna Magid, in his classic and beautiful way, gives a mashal. How can it be that Tov Me'od is the Yetzer Hara? So the Dubna Magid gave a very simple mashal that in those days, you know, they didn't have canned goods, they didn't have refrigeration, they didn't have vacuum packs, they didn't have freezing. And so meat could only stay for a day or two. But after a day or two, the meat would go sour, would spoil. However, people who owned restaurants couldn't throw away the meat. They had to use it a little longer. So what did they do? They would spice the meat very strongly with very powerful perfumes. And they put in not only to smell good, but also a lot of spices so it would be able to mask the foul taste and the foul smell. Says the Dubna Magid, people, most people, are attracted to the nice smell, and they're attracted to the good spices that are on the meat, and they ate it. However, wise people understood that the heavy spicing, the heavy fragrance, was really only there to mask the fact that the meat was actually spoiled. In other words, I think, and again, I'm taking this in a little bit of a different direction than the Dubna Magid took it, but I think it's the general idea. What that means is that when you have meat in the mashal, which tastes okay, it's good, it's okay. But if meat tastes, so to speak, in this mashal, perfect. The spices are perfect. The fragrance, perfect. That's everything perfect. Perfect is not perfect. Perfect is worse than good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, who himself is perfect, he's the epitome of shleimut and perfection. Of course, he can say tov or tov me'od. But a human being, when they are trying to accomplish something, especially in spirituality, they have to strive for tov. But they cannot and should not and must not strive for tov me'od. There is a certain expression that was coined, commonly attributed to Voltaire in 1770, who said, perfection or perfect is the enemy of good. And perhaps you've heard this expression, perhaps you haven't, but either way, it's worth spending a moment just to explain what I think that means, because I think the Torah is, and this Medrash is saying exactly that. Perfection is the enemy of good. If I want to be a better basketball player, so I'm going to practice, and I'm going to work hard, I am never going to be perfect. Whatever I say or whatever I do, I will never be as good as LeBron James or Michael Jordan or Wilt Chamberlain or whoever you can imagine. I'll never be as perfect as them. So it's very easy for me to say, why should I even try? Why should I even practice? I'm never going to be as perfect as Michael Jordan, as LeBron James. And the answer is no, you are never going to be perfect. And therefore, you can sit down. Or you can say, I can do well. I can play better. I can be good. And therefore, I will practice and be better and better. But if my goal is perfection, I'll never, ever, ever get there. Rav Kook used to say that when someone is trying to be a Baal Tshuva, their goal should not be to be a tzaddik, because that's sometimes too far for us. My goal is to be a Baal Tshuva. And the same is true here. You want to be tov? Go for it. Try. You want to be a better davener? Try. A better Baal Chesed? Try. You want to give more tzedakah? Try. You want to be the perfect Baal Tzedakah? You'll never get there, and by striving to be perfect, you won't even try to be good. You want to be the perfect person who davens? You'll never get there, so you'll sit down. No, I'll be better. And I think that this is so appropriate. We just finished the Chag of Sukkot. And Sukkot, in so many ways, teaches us this message. First of all, we have the rickety sukkah. The sukkah is not a permanent structure. It's not a perfect structure. It's got flimsy walls and a flimsy roof, and it's going to blow away a little bit, and it's not going to guard me from heavy sun or heavy rain or raccoons or what have you. But I still build a sukkah, and I still sit in the sukkah, and everyone sits in the sukkah, not just the tzaddikim, not just the gedolei hador. Every single person, from the best to the worst, so to speak, from the strongest to the weakest, so to speak. And here we are, we just finished Shmini Atzeret and Simchas Torah, and we were dancing with the Torahs. And which Torahs did we dance with? We didn't only dance with the Torahs that were kosher. Believe it or not, we took out the puzzle Sifrei Torah. And there's a question in Halacha why we're allowed to do that. Because aren't they mukta? A safer Torah that's pasul is mukta. And the answer is, normally that's true. You normally are not supposed to move a pasul safer Torah on a regular Shabbos or a regular Yantif. But guess what? Simchat Torah, the celebration of Torah, that you take out even the pasul safer Torah. It's not perfect? No, it's not perfect yet. And there's a tremendous story which I heard, which is a very similar idea, which I heard from Rav Meir Lichtenstein. Rav Meir Lichtenstein is one of the children of Rav Aharon Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Ivracha. And Rav Meir Lichtenstein told this story on the first yortzeit of a Rav by the name of Rav David Spector. Rav David Spector, Zecher Tzadik Ivracha, died 3 days before Sukkot in 2013. Happens to be that, in addition to being the chief rabbi of Beit Shemesh and many other positions, he was also the rabbi of a shul in Beit Shemesh by the name of Ohel Yonah Menachem, and Rav Meir Lichtenstein became the Rav after him. Anyway, on Rav David Spector's first Yortzeit, Rav Meir Lichtenstein told the following story, which I think is so powerful to what we're describing now. The story is about Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Cook. Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Cook was the son of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Cook was the chief rabbi of Israel. And the story goes that he was once walking in the streets of Yerushalayim on Sukkot, and he passed Kikar Shabbat, which is called Kikar Shabbos. Maybe you are familiar with it. Kikar Shabbos is sometimes where a lot of protests, often violent protests, against being Mechalel Shabbos. Anyway, in this protest that Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook saw, there was a person who was leading the rally, leading the protest, and he was saying to the frum people, to the Orthodox people in the protest, you know, we've got to keep protesting. He says, we are the Esrogim of Klal Yisrael. We are the Esrogim of Klal Yisrael. We are the Esrogim of Klal Yisrael. Now, he was referring, I think, to a famous, pretty well-known medrash which equates the four minim to the four types of Jews. You're probably familiar with this. The etrog has both a good taste and a good smell, so that symbolizes those who have both Torah and ma'asim tovim, good midot. The fruit of a lulav tree has a good taste but doesn't have a smell. Good taste and no smell, so that symbolizes people who have good taste, so to speak, learn Torah a lot, but no smell, they don't have good midot, good ma'asim tovim. The hadasim have a good smell, but they don't have a good taste, good smell and no good taste, and that symbolizes those who have good deeds, good ma'asim tovim, good midot, but don't study Torah at all. And then we have the arava. The arava has neither taste nor smell. And so that is the symbol of people who lack both Torah and Ma'asim Tovim. Anyway, so going back to the story, again, Rav Tzvi Yehuda was walking in the streets, and at this protest, and talking to Orthodox Jews, he was saying, we are the Esrogim, we are the Esrogim. And according to the way the story is told, Rav Tzvi Yehuda turned around and in anger muttered under his breath many, many, many times, it was the arava that was used to circle around the Mizbeach. It was the arava that was used when we circle around the Mizbeach. It was the arava that was used when we circle around the Mizbeach. The arava was used in every single day in the Beit HaMikdash. It was placed, the arava was placed at the Mizbeach, right next to the Mizbeach. And that is all the hakafot that we did every day of Sukkot, the Hoshanot, come from that ceremony in the Beit HaMikdash. And which one of the four minim is finally left at the end of Hoshana Rabbah, finally, the end of the tshuva season, which one of the midot did we left was left standing in our hands? The arava. It's the arava that has, it symbolizes the Jew with no Torah and no midot. And yet that is the arava, that is the midah, so to speak, that was placed at the Mizbeach every day. We cannot, must not strive only for perfection. If we are looking at the coming weeks and months until Hanukkah, until Purim, until Pesach, etc., I'm going to be perfect this, I'm going to be perfect that, that is the Yetzer Hara talking. It's the Yetzer Hara who is telling you, be perfect. Why? Because the Yetzer Hara knows, as the Medrash says, that you're not going to be perfect. And after a day or two, 3 days, a week, you're going to give up. I'm not going to be perfect. No, we're not striving for perfect. We are striving for good. And Yemir Tzah Hashem, as we continue on in Cheshvan, Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, coming up soon, the regular, so to speak, the plain old, so to speak, month with no Chagim, we're striving for good Tefillah, and we're striving for good Ma'asim Tovim, and we're striving for good Limud Torah. We're striving for good Midot, because if we strive for perfect, we'll never get there. Have a Shabbat Shalom.